I want to start with a number that, frankly, kind of blew my mind when I first saw this case study we are looking at today. It's about a single web page, just one isolated piece of content. And this page was sitting there effectively gathering dust, getting fewer than 20 organic visits a month, which is, you know, effectively a ghost town in terms of search traffic.
It is exactly the scenario that keeps SEO managers up at night, because the content exists and you paid for it and it is published, but nobody's actually seeing it. It is completely invisible to the target audience.
Exactly. And you are just left wondering what went wrong. But here is where it gets crazy. Within 4 months, that same page went from 20 visits to roughly 500 visits a month. That is a massive jump. And here's the kicker for everyone listening. It didn't happen because they bought a huge ad campaign or got some viral backlink from a major news outlet. It didn't happen because of a secret algorithm hack either.
There are absolutely no magic tricks or dark arts involved in this kind of turnaround. It is purely structural.
Right? No magic tricks at all. It happened because of a rewrite, a very specific and very deliberate type of rewrite. And I think that sets the stage perfectly for what we are diving into today. Because most teams, and definitely most people listening to this right now, have that one page. You know the one. It is a how-to post with a good topic, and your site has authority, so it should be ranking, but it is just stuck in the weeds.
It is the classic underperformer. It is the asset that is supposed to be an anchor for your cluster, but is instead acting like a paperweight, holding the whole strategy down.
Precisely. Today is about fixing that specific problem. Welcome to the Content Ship Podcast. This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work. We talk about search AI systems and the operational side of producing content that survives change.
And we are really going to get into the operational gears today to figure out why things break and how to put them back together.
This podcast is created by people who care deeply about their craft, working intentionally with AI, not to replace human judgment, but to extend it. That mindset is exactly why we built ContentShip, to give a single expert inside a company the kind of leverage and structure that used to require an entire team.
And that leverage is exactly what we are going to unpack today by looking at this specific framework.
And I am going to make a promise right up front
to
everyone tuning in. If you stick with us through this deep dive, you are not just going to get high-level theory. We are going to break down the exact rewrite checklist used in this case study. You're talking specific H2 structures and something called the example block template, which I honestly think is the secret sauce behind that massive traffic jump.
The example block is definitely the engine of the entire strategy. It completely changes the page from being a boring lecture into an actual practical tool for the user.
So let us get into the diagnosis first. Because you really cannot fix a piece of content if you do not understand why it is broken in the first place. I painted the picture earlier. Good topic. Good authority, 20 clicks a month. Why does a good page get stuck like that?
It is rarely because the writer is inherently bad or the topic is a bad choice. The problem usually comes from genuinely good intentions. The writer wants to be as helpful as possible, so they try to do everything. They try to satisfy every possible tangential question a user might have in one single document. And what you end up with is what we call the long scroll problem.
The long scroll. I can vividly visualize that. It is that frustrating feeling of just thumbing through a page on your phone and never actually finding the thing you clicked the link for.
You have seen it 1,000 times, I'm sure. You click on a how-to article, for example. Let us say how to write a resignation letter. The introduction spends 3 paragraphs defining what a resignation letter actually is. Then there's a weird history of resignation letters in the corporate world. Then maybe a tour of some tools you can use to write one. Then some generic tips like always be polite. Then married somewhere down in paragraph 14, there is finally a template. It is just a kitchen sink approach to content.
It feels like the writer is trying to prove they did their homework.
Oh!
It comes off as highly performative rather than actually helpful.
That performative nature is exactly what it is. It is written almost like a college essay, where the goal is to say, here is everything I possibly know about this topic to prove I am an expert. But that is simply not how people use the web. And this is not just a gut feeling on our part either. This is backed by decades of hard data from places like the Nielsen-Norman Group, who identified the F-shaped scanning pattern.
Right, the F pattern is something a lot of content folks have heard of, but could you unpack the actual mechanics of it for us? What are the user's eyes actually doing when the page loads?
When people land on a web page, they do not read line by line like they are reading a physical novel. Their eyes scan the top line first, which forms that top bar of the F shape. They basically want to answer the immediate question of, am I in the right place? Then they stand down a bit and read a little less across, forming the second shorter bar. And after that, they just scan straight down the left side of the page, looking for visual anchors like headings or bullet points or bold text. They are hunting, they are not reading, they are foraging for very specific information.
Foraging is such a perfect word for that behavior. It implies a specific hunger or a need to extract something useful quickly rather than wanting to be entertained by prose.
So if your page is just a massive wall of text that mixes definitions and tips and tools in a completely random order, the forager simply cannot find the food. They get frustrated immediately, they bounce back to the search results, and when they bounce, Google absolutely notices that behavior. Google looks at that interaction and says, I cannot figure out what the primary job of this page is. Is it a dictionary or a tutorial or a product review?
So if you try to be everything to everyone, you basically confuse the algorithm.
You end up ranking for nothing because the signal you are sending to the search engine is just too noisy and unfocused.
That is a pretty harsh reality check for a lot of us. Because I think a whole generation of marketers were taught that long-form content is king. The prevailing advice for years was to just write 3,000 words and you will naturally rank. But you are saying that length is not the right metric at all. Clarity is the metric.
Length should always be a byproduct of answering the question, not the actual goal. If you legitimately need 3,000 words to solve a complex problem, then fine. But if you are just filling 3,000 words because you think Google charges by the inch or rewards word count, you are going to lose. You have to respect the user's time above everything else.
Okay, so we have successfully diagnosed the patient here. The stuck page is trying to do way too many jobs at once, and it is completely ignoring how humans actually read on the web with that F-shaped scanning behavior. So let us talk about the cure. We know we are not just going to add more words. What is step one of the actual rewrite process?
Step one actually has nothing to do with writing words on a page. It has everything to do with intent. Before you type a single new word or delete an old one, you have to firmly decide what specific job the reader hired this page to do.
And when you say intent, you are not just throwing that around as a marketing buzzword. You're talking about how Google explicitly defines it in their own systems, right?
Exactly right. We can look directly at the source code for this, which is the Google Search Quality Evaluator Guidelines. These are the literal instructions Google gives to thousands of human raters to check if their algorithm is actually serving good results. They break user intent down into four main buckets, which are no-do website and visit in person.
No and do seem like the two massive ones for anyone in content marketing. Let us really distinguish the boundaries between those two.
They absolutely are the big ones. No intent is purely information seeking. So a search like how tall is the Empire State Building or what is a 401k is no intent. The user just wants to acquire a piece of knowledge. Do intent, on the other hand, is highly action oriented. Searches like how to write a resignation letter or template for a quarterly business review or even buy running shoes all fall under do intent.
And so the core problem with that stuck page we talked about earlier, the one gathering dust at 20 visits a month, is a mismatch there.
The fatal flaw is that for most how-to keywords, the dominant intent is almost always do. The user actively wants to complete a task, but the writer often treats it like a no intent. They spend 80% of the page teaching the abstract concept, which is no, and only 20% helping the user actually finish the task, which is do.
That makes so much intuitive sense. If I search how to write a cover letter, I really do not want a historical breakdown of cover letters. I do not care who invented them. I just want to get the actual letter written so I can hit submit on my job application.
Exactly. Even if there is a tiny no component to the search, like maybe the user needs to briefly understand why a specific format matters, the dominant desire is still execution. In this case study we are discussing today, the rewrite that drove that massive traffic lift happened because they completely stopped trying to teach the topic. They shifted the entire focus of the page to giving readers ready-to-use examples. They moved from explaining what the concept means to saying, here is something you can copy and paste right now.
But I do have to play devil's advocate here for a second, because this is where SEOs get nervous. If we narrow the focus just to that do intent, and we only provide examples and templates, aren't we leaving traffic on the table? Won't we lose our rankings for all those broad, what is related questions?
Yes, you absolutely will lose some of that broad traffic. And you have to be completely honest with your team about that trade-off. You might lose ranking for broad, loosely related queries. You might lose the people who are just casually browsing for dictionary definitions. But here's the critical thing to understand. For an SEO strategist who actually needs to hit business KPIs in a 1 to 6 month window, that is a trade you should make every single time.
Because the quality of the traffic you retain is just exponentially better for the business.
Exactly. Because you win the primary query. You win the actual people who want to take action right now. And usually when you absolutely nail the primary intent, you end up ranking much higher for the specific cluster of keywords directly around it. You sacrifice the broad, low-value noise to completely dominate the high-value signal. You are essentially trading vanity metrics for actual conversion metrics.
That is such a powerful distinction to make. It is about actively choosing to be the absolute best answer for one specific practical question, rather than being a mediocre, watered-down answer for 10 different theoretical questions.
Precisely. You have to pick your lane and own it.
Okay, so we have locked in our intent. We know we are writing for due. We are fully committed to action. Now we need to actually structure the page itself. If we are staring at a blank screen, or rather staring at the messy old page we are about to overhaul, what does the new skeleton of this content look like?
We call this new framework the fastest path to value structure, and adopting it really requires breaking the deeply ingrained habit of the slow ramp up.
The slow ramp up being those terrible introductions we all read where it says something like, in today's fast-paced digital world, communication is more important than ever.
Yes, exactly that intro. Everyone hates reading that intro. It is pure fluff. It is actively disrespecting the user's time and patience. The new skeleton completely cuts all of that out. It has three main parts. First is the intro. You keep it incredibly short. You set the context, you acknowledge the user's specific problem, and then you get out of the way.
Short and sweet. So something more like, you need a resignation letter today, and here's exactly how to write one.
Exactly. Then the second part is the definition. But, and this is a massive caveat here, you only include a definition if it is absolutely necessary for the user to understand what comes next. And if you do include it, you keep it to a strict maximum of one paragraph.
One paragraph is a really strict boundary for writers who are used to expanding on thought leadership.
It has to be strict because part three is the core. This is where you immediately jump into the practical examples, the templates, or the actionable steps. The entire goal of the page is to get the user to the thing they came for as fast as humanly possible.
So there is absolutely no wandering off topic allowed in this structure.
No wandering at all. A really useful mental model for this, and this is something to always keep in mind when designing your headline and your first screen, is that a user should be able to look at the very top of your page and answer two distinct questions. What am I going to get here, and how fast am I going to get it?
What am I getting and how fast? I really like that as a litmus test for the top of the funnel.
Because if your first screen is 20% dictionary definitions and a giant stock photo of two business people shaking hands, the user's answer to how fast is going to be not very fast at all. And they will immediately click the back button to find a competitor's page that looks faster and more respectful of their time.
It is so interesting you mentioned that first screen experience because it ties perfectly back to that psychological predictability factor. When I personally land on a page that is structured this way, with a tight intro and a tiny definition and boom, right into the examples, I instantly feel relaxed. I feel like the brand actually respects me.
That is the exact psychological key we are aiming for. Predictability. When a reader lands on a page and immediately sees a clear, reliable pattern, like a heading, then a template, then another template, they stop hunting. Their brain physically switches modes from searching to consuming. You have dramatically reduced their cognitive load. You've made it incredibly easy for them to just stay and read.
It is almost like you're creating a visual rhythm for them to fall into as they scroll.
Exactly. And once they find that rhythm and realize the page is consistently delivering value, they begin to deeply trust the page. And by extension, your brand.
And that leads us perfectly into the specific micro tactic that was heavily featured in the source material for this deep dive. We have talked about the overall skeleton, but what are we actually putting on those bones? The source talks at length about this example block template.
Yeah.
This seems to be the actual mechanical engine that drove all that new value.
This is absolutely the micro tactic that makes the macro strategy work. Because you cannot just dump a raw list of examples on a page and call it a day. You have to format them strategically. The case study we are looking at used a highly repeatable three-part template for every single example block on the page.
Okay, let us really break down those three parts so listeners can visualize this.
Okay.
If I am looking at the newly rewritten page right now, what exactly do my eyes see in one of these blocks?
Part one is the situation. This is a very short explanation of the specific context. So for an email template, it might say, use this template when you're asking your manager for a raise, or use this example when a freelance client is ghosting your invoices. It perfectly sets the scene. Simple enough. It helps me instantly qualify if this specific example is actually the right tool for my current problem.
Exactly. Then part two is the asset itself. This is the ready-to-use thing. It is the email script, the specific code snippet, the downloadable checklist. It is the actual thing they can copy and paste. And visually, this should be very distinct from the rest of the text, maybe placed inside a gray callout box or a formatted code block so it pops.
So that is the actual do part of the intent. That is the meat of the sandwich.
Yes, but part three is really where the SEO magic happens. Part three is the why.
The why. Walk me through exactly what that means in this context.
The why is one or two very concise sentences explaining exactly why this specific example is effective. So you might write, this works because it references a past shared win with the client, or this works because it gives the recipient a clear no option, which lowers the social pressure to respond.
But why is that little explanation so critical to the page's success? I mean, if they came for a template, why not just give them the template and let them leave? They just want the tool right. Because offering the why is how you actually own authority and trust. And quite honestly, it is how human writers are going to beat AI-generated content going forward. Any basic AI tool can generate a generic, polite email template. But explicitly explaining the mechanism, the actual psychological logic behind why those specific words were chosen, proves to the reader that you actually understand what you are doing.
It shows you are not just a parrot repeating standard advice.
Yeah.
It proves you are a real strategist who has navigated this problem before.
Right. It deeply satisfies the reader who needs to adapt the template to their own messy, specific situation. If they genuinely understand why the template works structurally, they can change the nouns and verbs without breaking the underlying magic. And from a pure SEO perspective, that unique insight is often the exact thing that earns backlinks. Other writers and sites link to the underlying logic and expertise, not just the raw copy-paste text.
That is a massive takeaway for anyone writing content right now.
Yeah.
The why is the ultimate trust builder. So if I am rewriting a post about, say, subject lines for cold sales emails,
yeah,
I should absolutely not just list 50 bullet points of subject lines. I should write, here's the subject line, and here is why it gets opens, because it creates a curiosity gap without resorting to cheap clickbait.
Exactly. That is a tangible value add that a standard massive listicle rarely provides. And if you repeat that exact block structure of situation asset and why place 10 times down the page, you establish that comforting rhythm we talked about earlier. The reader knows exactly what to expect as they scroll.
I really love that approach. It effectively turns a static article into an interactive tool. It changes the user behavior from passively reading to actively using the resource.
Precisely. And Google's behavioral metrics pick up on that active usage very quickly.
Okay, so we have nailed down the intent focusing on do. We've got the macro structure set up for the fastest path to value. And we have our micro content dialed in with the example block template. Now we have to shift gears and talk about the technical SEO side. Because as we all know, you can write the best, most helpful content in the world, but if the technical signals you send to Google are crossed or confusing, the algorithm might still completely misinterpret the page.
This is what we call the polish phase of the rewrite. Once the narrative structure is locked in, you need to meticulously ensure all your technical signals align. And the absolute biggest one people miss is the alignment between your H1, your title tag, and your opening paragraph.
This sounds so fundamental, but I feel like it is the exact thing that gets messed up constantly in the rush to publish.
It happens all the time, especially with rewrites. You'll see a page where the title tag says the ultimate guide to project management software, but then the H1 on the page says how to manage a remote team, and then the very first paragraph starts talking about communication theories. It is completely disjointed and sends mixed signals.
It is like buying a product where the picture on the box looks nothing like the actual toy inside. It immediately creates distrust.
And Google hates that mismatch just as much as users do. If you look at Google's own official documentation on title links in search results, they explicitly state that if their system dynamically rewrites your title in the SRPP, it is most often because your provided title did not accurately match the visible main content on the page. They are actively stepping in to fix your misleading packaging.
So if you notice Google is rewriting your titles in Search Console, you really need to take the hint and fix your alignment.
Exactly. You want to align all three of those elements around the exact same core promise. If your core promise is 5 examples of professional resignation letters, then the title tag should say exactly that the H1 should mirror it perfectly, and the intro paragraph should literally start with, here are 5 examples of professional resignation letters.
So the lesson there is do not try to get cute or overly creative with your headers.
Do not get cute at all. Be ruthlessly clear. Clarity beats cleverness in search engine optimization every single time.
Now, another major issue that always comes up when we talk about aggressive rewriting and cutting fluff is the total length of the piece. We established earlier that we are not just blindly trying to hit a 3,000 word count anymore. But sometimes when you cut all that historical background and throat clearing, the page feels really short. Or maybe it feels like it is missing structural weight compared to the top competitors. How do we strategically fill those content gaps without just adding the fluff right back in?
This brings up the crucial difference between simple padding and adding expected subtopics. Padding is just adding empty adjectives and repetitive sentences to look busy to an algorithm. Expected subtopics are the natural, logical follow-up questions the user actually needs answered to fully complete their task.
Give me a concrete example to really illustrate that difference between padding and expected subtopics.
Let us stick with the email template scenario. If you are rewriting a page focused on cold outreach templates, a highly expected subtopic to include would be a section on follow-up timing.
Right, because realistically, once I copy your template and send that first email, my very next immediate question is going to be, how many days should I wait before sending the next one?
Exactly. Another expected subtopic might be subject line formulas that pair well with the templates. These additions are not fluff at all. They are an integral part of the ecosystem of the user's problem. If you analyze the top-ranking pages for these queries, you will frequently see these specific subtopics covered. So you should absolutely cover them too, not because you are blindly copying the competitor's word count, but because you are meeting the baseline expectations of the searcher.
You are basically just anticipating the user's next hurdle and solving it before they even have to search for it again.
Yes. And you insert those expected subtopics only where they genuinely serve the reader's journey, not just throwing them at the bottom of the page to pump up your keyword density metrics.
And speaking of anticipating the user's next step, this brings us to a really interesting point about internal linking. The source material specifically mentioned using strategic internal links to reduce something called pogo sticking. First off, let us define that term for anyone who might be new to it. What exactly is pogo sticking in an SEO context?
Pogo sticking is that frustrating behavior where a user clicks your result and the SRP looks around your page for maybe 5 seconds and realizes it is not exactly what they want, hits the back button on their browser, and immediately clicks the very next result down the list. It is a very strong negative engagement signal to Google that your page failed to satisfy the query.
It basically tells Google in real time that your page was a dead end for that specific searcher.
Right. So one highly effective way to keep people engaged on your domain, even if the specific page they landed on did not perfectly answer 100% of their query, is to provide extremely clear pathways to other relevant answers you have published. And this is exactly where smart internal linking comes into play.
But the source was clear that not just any links will work. Just slapping click here at the end of a paragraph really does not cut it anymore.
Using click here as anchor text is a massive wasted opportunity for both the user and the crawler. You want to use highly descriptive anchor text. So instead of vaguely saying for more information on writing good subject lines, click here, you should structurally integrate it by saying, check out our comprehensive guide on specific subject line patterns.
So the anchor text of the link itself clearly signals exactly what the destination page is about before they even click.
Google has been actively preaching this exact concept since at least 2008. There is a very old post on the Google Search Central blog about the importance of descriptive link architecture, and the core principle has not changed one bit. Clear descriptive paths help search crawlers understand your overall site structure and topical authority, and simultaneously they help human users navigate complex topics without having to think too hard.
It all circles right back to reducing that cognitive load. You were saying, do not make me think about where to click. Just clearly show me the most logical next step.
Exactly. You are acting as a guide, not a maze designer.
I want to take a quick pause right here. We are really deep in the weeds of structure and intent and technical alignment, and I honestly hope you are finding this breakdown as intensely practical as I am. If you are enjoying this deep dive into the actual mechanics of content, and if you like getting into the operational gear turning of how content actually ranks today, do us a quick favor. Hit follow or subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now. We do these deep dives regularly, and we want to make sure you do not miss the next operational breakdown.
It really helps us keep bringing you these specific tactical teardowns.
Okay. Let us dive right back into the workflow side of things.
Yeah.
Because I know exactly what some of the content strategists listening right now are thinking. You're saying, this all sounds amazing in theory, but I have a backlog of 50 stuck pages to rewrite this quarter, and doing deep manual competitive analysis for every single one takes forever.
It is notoriously the absolute biggest time sink in the entire SEO process. You open 10 different browser tabs, you read every single word of your competitors' posts, you take copious notes in a document, and suddenly it is 3 p.m. and you have not written a single word of your own rewrite.
It is total paralysis by analysis.
Right.
So how do we actually speed that workflow up without sacrificing quality? The source material suggests a very specific fast method for this phase.
The fast method is a bit brutal, but it is highly effective for scaling this process. The absolute core rule is this: do not read the competitor content. You only scan it.
Do not read. Just scan. That goes against every research instinct we have.
You have to turn off the reader part of your brain because you are purely scanning for structure, not for their specific phrasing or tone. You open the top three ranking results. You strictly look at their H2 headers. Do they all feature a distinct benefit section? Do they all have a dedicated template section? Do they all include a structured FAQ at the bottom?
You are basically just using their pages like an X-ray to find the underlying skeleton of the SRP. You are trying to reverse engineer what specific structural elements Google has already decided to reward for this query.
Precisely. Once you scan those top three, you make a definitive list of the must-cover subtopics, which are the structural pieces everyone else already has. Then, and this is the most crucial step of the fast method, you decide on exactly one single differentiator for your page.
Just one differentiator. That seems almost too simple. Shouldn't we try to be 10 times better at everything?
You really do not need to be comprehensively better at every single thing to outrank them. You just need one highly visible thing that makes your specific page genuinely worth bookmarking. Maybe your email examples are much more recent and reflect current trends. Maybe your visual formatting is significantly cleaner and easier to copy from. Or maybe you lean heavily into providing that insightful why it works explanation we talked about earlier, which none of your competitors bother to do.
So the playbook is basically match the table stakes regarding structure and expected subtopics, then aggressively beat them on one specific, highly valuable axis.
Right. And adopting this constraint keeps the rewrite tightly bounded. You are no longer trying to create some sprawling Frankenstein monster that includes every single idea ever published on the internet. You are creating a very clean, highly focused utility resource.
Now we have to address the giant elephant in the room, which is artificial intelligence. Because a lot of people are going to ask, why can't I just ask an AI writing tool to analyze the top 10 search results and write a better article for me?
You certainly can prompt an AI to do that, but it probably will not work the way you actually want it to. It usually results in very average output. The source we are analyzing today actually outlines a very specific safe pattern for leveraging AI effectively in this rewrite process.
Walk me through that safe pattern, because I think a lot of content teams are currently split. They are either completely afraid to touch AI, or they rely on it way too much and end up publishing generic sludge that goes nowhere.
It is entirely about understanding exactly what a language model is fundamentally good at and what it is fundamentally bad at. AI is absolutely fantastic at quickly drafting 10 alternative titles for you to choose from. It's incredibly efficient at proposing an H2 outline that mirrors the common search queries it has been trained on. It is also great at taking your rough bulleted notes and expanding them into a grammatically correct introductory paragraph.
So it acts essentially as a massive force multiplier for the structural grunt work of SEO.
Yes, it speeds up the mechanical assembly. But where AI consistently fails right now is determining true intent and articulating a complex mechanism. An AI looking at a Superpio often cannot truly distinguish if the frustrated human user really wants a downloadable calculator or just a simple text definition. It just processes the keyword associations. It completely lacks the theory of mind required to genuinely empathize with the user's specific pain point.
And based on my own testing, it definitely struggles with generating that why it works insight we identified as the main trust builder.
Exactly right. If you ask an AI why an email template works, it tends to spit out incredibly vague platitudes. It will say something useless like, this is effective because it uses engaging language and a professional tone. That is not an actual insight. That is just conversational fluff. You absolutely need a human domain expert to look at the template and say, this is highly effective because it directly leverages the psychological principle of scarcity.
So the smartest workflow is to let the AI operate heavy machinery to quickly build the walls and the roof. But the human expert has to survey the location, pour the foundation, and design the actual architecture.
That is a brilliant analogy for the modern workflow. And this brings us right to the broader operational side of things. Because if you are just doing this rigorous intent mapping and structural scanning for one single page, doing it manually is fine. But if you manage a site and you are doing it for 500 legacy pages, you desperately need a scalable system. And this is exactly where the vision for ContentShip comes into play.
Right, because we just talked about how manual competitive analysis is the biggest time sink in the industry.
ContentShip is specifically built to turn that chaotic manual analysis into a smooth, continuous operating rhythm. Instead of relying on a frantic quarterly SEO audit where you try to aggressively fix everything at once, the platform uses continuous feed monitoring and AI-driven scoring to autonomously rank your rewrite opportunities. It proactively alerts you and says, hey, this specific topic is suddenly heating up in your cluster, and your main competitor just published a remarkably weak piece of content. Right now is the exact time to strike and rewrite your old asset.
It shifts the entire team's posture from being constantly reactive to being strategically proactive.
It is entirely about optimizing the human workflow. A senior SEO strategist absolutely should not be spending 3 hours copying and pasting competitor URLs into a clunky spreadsheet to check their H2s. They should be spending their valuable mental energy making the high-leverage strategic decisions about user intent and defining the psychological mechanism of the templates.
So let us imagine we have executed the whole playbook. We diagnosed the bad intent. We completely rewrote the page using the fastest path to value skeleton. We added the example blocks. We optimized the technical polish and hit publish. The shiny new page is officially live. How do we actually know if all this effort worked? The case study we read said it took a full 4 months for the traffic to truly peak. That is a really long time for a marketing team to hold their breath waiting for ROI.
It is a long time to wait for the final result, but the good news is you do not have to wait 4 months to see strong early signs of life. There is a very specific hierarchy of metrics you need to watch in the weeks immediately following the rewrite.
Walk us through that hierarchy. What is the very first sign of life we should be looking for in our analytics?
The absolute first metric to move will be your impressions. If you open up Google Search Console, you will almost always see a distinct jump in total impressions well before you see a meaningful spike in actual clicks.
Why does the system work that way? Why do impressions lead the clicks so distinctly?
Because the new structure you just built with the crystal clear H2s and the tightly aligned do intent suddenly makes your page algorithmically eligible to appear for a much wider variety of long tail queries. Google immediately starts testing your new content. It says, oh, I see this newly updated page now has a dedicated section specifically on follow-up timing. Let us dynamically show it on page one or two for that specific query and see what happens. You probably will not get the click right away because you are initially ranking in position 8 or 9, but you are definitively showing up in the results where you were invisible before.
So a sudden spike in Search Console impressions is basically your leading indicator that Google has crawled the page, understood the new structure, and actually liked the changes.
Exactly. It means you are back in the game. Then the second vital metric to track is position distribution. But here is the major operational trick you need to employ. Do not just load the page into an SEO tool and track the 200 random broad keywords it spits out.
Which is unfortunately the default setting for almost every major rank tracking tool on the market right now. It just hands you a massive list of every possible term.
And that massive list is mostly just distracting noise. Instead, you need to meticulously track the 10 specific long-tail terms that map directly to your new H2s. If you deliberately wrote an H2 about cold email subject lines for startups, you need to track that exact specific term. Is that specific row moving up from position 30 to position 12? If your granular structural H2s are steadily climbing the ranks, then your overarching rewrite strategy is fundamentally working.
And finally, what about the on-page experience? How do we measure if the users actually like the new formatting?
That comes down to two specific engagement metrics, which are scroll depth and time on page. If you radically shifted the content to an example block structure, people absolutely should be scrolling down. They are actively foraging, looking for the one specific example that perfectly fits their unique use case. If your scroll depth metrics suddenly collapse, meaning everyone is abruptly leaving at the very first screen, then your new structure might actually be too visually repetitive, or perhaps your new shortened intro simply is not hooking them fast enough to confirm they are in the right place.
So even after you publish, you have to constantly listen to the behavioral feedback loop.
Always. The rewrite is a massive step, but the behavioral data tells you if you nailed the execution.
This has been honestly a phenomenal masterclass in modern on-page SEO strategy. I feel like we have really deeply unpacked the fundamental difference between just writing content to fill a calendar and actually engineering a practical resource that solves a problem.
That is the exact mental shift every content team needs to make right now. You have to stop thinking like a traditional magazine writer and start thinking much more like a digital product designer.
Let us do a quick recap of the whole journey before we close out today's deep dive.
Yeah.
We started with a stuck page one that was arrogantly trying to be a comprehensive library instead of being a sharp, practical tool.
We correctly diagnosed it as having a split personality regarding intent. It was exhaustingly trying to satisfy no intent and do intent at the exact same time and failing at both.
So we boldly fixed the intent. We fully committed to serving the do intent. And we accepted the very real trade-off that we might intentionally lose some low-value generic traffic in order to capture and convert the high-value action-oriented users.
We then completely rebuilt the physical skeleton of the page using the fastest path to value framework. We used a tight intro, a tiny definition if necessary, and immediately jumped into the examples. And we rigorously applied the example block template to provide visual predictability and build deep psychological trust with the why statement.
Then we polished the technical side to make sure the machines understood it. We perfectly aligned the H1 and title tag. We strategically filled the content gaps with expected subtopics instead of fluff. And we fixed the internal link anchor text to prevent that dreaded pogo sticking behavior.
And finally, we established a smart workflow to actually measure the impact properly by carefully watching leading indicators like search impressions and specific H2 keyword positions, rather than just obsessing over massive vanity metrics.
It sounds like a tremendous amount of focused work just for one single page on a massive website.
It is unquestionably hard work, but here is the final thought I really want to leave with the listeners today. This entire methodology is fundamentally about the compound effect.
Tell me a little bit more about how that compound effect actually materializes for a business.
The truly reliable long-term wins in modern SEO do not come from frantically publishing more and more mediocre pages every week. They come from taking what you already own and making it dramatically clearer and more helpful than anything else on the internet. When you execute this properly, when you ruthlessly tighten the intent and send a blindingly clean signal to the algorithm, you are not just getting a temporary one-time traffic bump. You are structurally building a digital asset that naturally defends its own top position. Because a page that perfectly and quickly answers the user's practical question is incredibly hard for any competitor to displace.
It essentially becomes an immovable anchor for your entire topical cluster.
It becomes a massive anchor. And if you slowly and methodically apply this process to your top 10 almost there pages, the ones sitting on page 2 or 3, that is exactly how you fundamentally transform a website's entire growth trajectory. It is absolutely not about desperately chasing the lottery ticket of a single viral post. It is completely about leveraging the steady compounding interest of extreme clarity.
That is a genuinely fantastic place for us to land today. The compounding interest of clarity, I absolutely love that framing.
It is the only reliable path forward in search right now.
So here's my practical challenge to you, the listener, for this week. Do not go back to your desk and try to rewrite your entire domain all at once. Pick one single page, just one. Find that specific how-to page that has great authority and should be ranking but is currently gathering dust. Open it up right now. Look at it with totally fresh eyes. Is it a massive, exhausting, long scroll of text? Is the core intent muddy and confusing? Try aggressively applying the skeleton and the example blocks we talked about today. Hit publish and just watch what the data does.
I guarantee you will learn something valuable from that single experiment.
And if you are trying to scale this exact kind of strategic thinking across a large editorial organization, or if you just want to see firsthand how purpose-built technology can help you identify these massive rewrite opportunities infinitely faster, go visit www.contentship.io. You can subscribe for future episodes right there, or you can just check out the specific tools we are actively building to help content teams work much smarter instead of just typing harder.
We are building the exact tools we always wished we had.
Thanks for diving deep with us today on this one. We will see you in the next one.
See you then.